Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to SprucePine.org. This is Dr. John, sometimes known from ScaryCast and sometimes known from Pop Culture Stars, here with you tonight. We got a great guest and great co-host, so we're excited to get this show started. First of all, I want to introduce my co-host, my good buddy from Jacksonville, North Carolina, Dave Atwell. How you doing tonight, Dave?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic. It's awful nice to get the special invite to help you out this evening and co-host for this fantastic guest we have this evening. So, yeah, looking forward to tonight's show. And now I know my calendar is going to be all messed up for the rest of the week because I'll be thinking tomorrow's Thursday and then the extra day is Friday because we're used to doing this on Wednesday night. But old people problems. I'll get over it and move on.
Oh, you'll get over it. You're not that old. Yes, tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern, we will have Pop Culture Stars with Dave, of course, and Papa Stroh, the Maestro of Wrestling, Todd Saxon, and the Queen of Sparkle herself, Liz Brackett. So it's a fun group, and we have a great time on Wednesday nights. So anyway, tonight we've got a very special guest. A couple of weeks ago, a young man from the Charlotte area, Seth Jones, crossed the finish line of the assault on Mount Mitchell first. And as far as I know, the assault on Mount Mitchell running from Spartanburg Memorial Auditorium in Spartanburg, South Carolina, up to the very top of Mount Mitchell in Mitchell County, North Carolina, is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, endurance challenges in the world. And here's a fella tonight we're going to bring on who won. He finished first, and that's a great achievement. Good evening, Seth. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
I'm doing
good. Hey, doing
good.
Glad to have you. Good to have you on.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome. The first question, I've been waiting to ask this of you ever since I saw the headline that you had won. How did it feel, and what were you thinking when you crossed that finish line with everyone behind you? How did that feel?
First thought was I'm pretty hungry right now. A close second thought was just a happiness that I finished the event. Honestly, it was a lot of like hours on the bike and a lot of hours that day. I think the time that I came in at was like 5:04 or 5:06 or something. And so honestly, just a lot of excitement came over me and just a lot of relief just because I could get off my bike from that point.
Wow. So 5 hours and 4 minutes. How many miles was the trip from Spartanburg Memorial Auditorium to the top of Mount Mitchell?
I think it was a total of 102 or 103 miles. The funny part is like once it's about 70 miles from Spartanburg Auditorium to like the base of Mount Mitchell. So from like those 70 miles onward, it feels like a completely different day because you're doing like another half of the hours at that point. So you do half the mileage like during that point, just climbing up the mountain.
Wow. I mean, from Spartanburg County, just to the base of Mount Mitchell, there's a fairly serious incline because you're moving up into the mountains of North Carolina, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So it's kind of always consistently going up. You know, like, you have different, you have varying hills and things of that nature, but it's always kind of consistently going up until, like, the base of Mount Mitchell, and then that's where it really starts to kick up.
Oh, my goodness. And you looked at that and said, oh, if I can just keep my legs going. Did you ever jump off your bike just to stretch for a minute, or did you stay on your bike the entire time?
No, I stayed on my bike the entire time. I was lucky enough to have two other people riding with me. And so we all just consistently took turns pulling for each other and taking like coverage from the wind behind each other. And we did get off our bikes at one point just to get water, but we were only off our bikes for probably a minute, 2 minutes, and we just quickly got water and quickly got back on.
Gotcha. So how long have you been riding, I guess we would say riding competitively. That would be the correct term, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So I've probably been riding a bike seriously for about 5 years, and I probably started competing like 4 years ago. And so there's a year time span where I was pretty intently riding my bike like every other day of the week or as much as I could as like a 14-year-old kid, but I just wasn't racing. I always had the plan to, but I just didn't think I was fit enough. And then after that year, I finally kind of got the confidence and did a race for the first time.
How did that first race go?
It's actually pretty funny. The first race did not go well. I think I got second to last, maybe last. It was kind of a shocker, but it immediately kind of made me want to, you know, do it more and get fitter and conquer this challenge that I just found.
Well, it sounds like you did. Now that you have gone from 5 years ago finishing almost last to winning the assault on Mount Mitchell, where does a competitive cyclist go from this point on? Because it sounds like, now I know right now you're out in parts unknown in the United States getting ready to race. Where does a career in competitive cycling go?
It's a tough question, especially in America. Usually, around here, especially in America, I should say, cycling's not a sport that's really all that common, you know, and so it's not as common as football or soccer or baseball. And so I guess a career path in cycling would usually turn into racing over in Europe almost full time. And so I've just turned professional this year for an American based team. And I think just from here, I'm really looking forward to like maybe gain access to a European team and get on a European team and start racing over in Europe more.
Okay, now you talk about you just turned professional. And I'm sorry, this is a question I don't know the answer to. When you did the assault on Mount Mitchell, was there a monetary prize for winning since you're a professional?
No. So there's for that event, there's no monetary prize. For some cycling events and cycling races, there are monetary prizes. But that's kind of what makes Mount Mitchell special, you know, just because it's like it's truly just people out there doing this challenge because they love to do the challenge and just to beat other people and beat themselves up on that mountain, you know.
Well, it's the greatest mountain on the East Coast, or we should say east of the Mississippi. Now, I've heard, I'm not sure what they're called, but there are a couple mountain races somewhat like the assault on Mount Mitchell over on the West Coast. Are you familiar with any of those?
I kind of am. I know recently, before the assault on Mount Mitchell, there's this partially gravel dirt road race called the Belgian Waffle Ride, and that's out in California, and that's 140 miles of mixed road pavement and like gravel racing. And then I know there's this one called Dirty Kansas, which is in Kansas, and it's 200 miles of gravel racing. So that one's mainly on gravel and dirt roads, which always makes for interesting racing. And I've always wanted to do that one, so maybe next year I'll be able to do it.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, could I imagine that racing on a gravel road is brutal?
Yeah, it's got to be to the death.
It definitely does. It's a different type of body build that's kind of meant for that versus just riding on the road. You know, you got to be a little more hefty and a little more stocky to be able to do that especially for 200 miles for that long.
Yeah. Now, if you are doing something like that, wouldn't you? The folks who come with you to support you and have supplies and things, those are called shaggers. In fact, I shagged for a fellow when he did the assault on Mount Mitchell. It must have been 15 years ago. But wouldn't you also need to probably carry extra tires or things like that if you were on a gravel road in case you had a blowout?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And that's like that's actually a major part of that race, Dirty Kansas, is because, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere most of the time, and so you're kind of mainly all supported by yourselves besides certain spaces that they call feed zones. And so if you go into a feed zone, you have the people supporting you there able to help you. But, I mean, for 98% of the time, you're out there by yourself or with your competitors who will probably not help you, you know?
Wow.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. That just sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's great. It's a great way to be competitive and everything. I mean, I know when I'm in Rabun County, I run the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and when I'm going out trying to meet people, like going to the Fox Firecraft community, I'm going straight up and straight down gravel and dirt roads to try to get onto the correct mountain to see the Foxfire group, and it's just horrible, just me and my car with good tires. So I mean, I can imagine it's just something else. Now, when you're doing all this, do you have a coach, someone that works with you to help you train, or have you done all this yourself, or is it a combination of both?
That's another good question. You're hitting all the good questions here. I've been mainly coached by another person. There's a short period of time when I first started out that I was just coaching myself, just because at that point of my career and I was just so young, I didn't really need a coach. But at this point that I'm at right now, I definitely have a coach, and it's kind of more of a mutual. It's like a give and take relationship, I guess. That's the best words to describe it. It's because, you know, like I tell him how I'm feeling, and he tells me what workouts I should do to cause another different feeling that I should have. And so it's really a lot of communications involved, and a lot of work goes in behind the scenes.
And I take it that your coach is an experienced cyclist. It sounds like he would be.
Yeah. Currently I'm coached by a guy named Jeff Louder. And if there's any cycling fans out there, Jeff Ladder's won the Tour of Utah before, which is another major race in America, and he's raced overseas, and he definitely has a lot of experience under his belt, which is nice to have on my side of the court.
All right, well, that's great. I know sounds like you really love what you do. Yesterday?
Oh, no, I was agreeing. That's, you know, if you're going to be the best, you got to train with the best, and to have somebody like that backing you up at such a early time, man, all you got to do is, you know, and I say it quite a bit, sit back and listen. Take in as much as you can while you can, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And it's definitely something that's great. Like if I have any issues or any thing that's like on my mind training wise or even racing wise, I can just always talk to somebody who has more experience about it. And like you said, it's definitely a big helper.
Yeah, I've got a little story. When I was in high school and college, I was a scratch golfer, and a fellow moved into my town. My dad met him. He was a salesman at a furniture factory. And turns out he had 3 PGA Tour wins under his belt and had been a club pro for a while. And, I mean, you talk about a great coach. What he made me do is we would go out after his work. He'd get off at 5 o'clock. We'd go out to our club. And he made me play the golf course backwards. I teed off next to the 18th green. And the 17th green was my target. And which meant you could never do better than bogey, but you'd have to place your second shot so that you'd have a good chip over. And I mean, you talk about it's wonderful to have access to a great coach that can teach you how to practice and can really make you better. Now, what are some of the other, because I know I don't know much about cycling other than my experience of shagging on Mount Mitchell about 15 years ago. What are some of the other major races? Like, is there like a national championship over here that you can compete in, or are there just a number of great races like the Assault on Mount Mitchell?
Yeah, and so in cycling in America, there's definitely there's what's called the Pro Road Tour, the PRT for sure, short, and it's kind of like the NFL. It's like the best way I could describe it. And so it's like a sanctioning, kind of a sanctioning body that works with another sanctioning body called USA Cycling, and so they work together to create a racing calendar. And so a lot of the bigger teams in the US will go and do those races on the racing calendars. The race that I'm doing this weekend is actually on that calendar. And then there is a national championship in America, and usually how that works is there's a professional national championships, and so the people who go and race that event have to be on a professional team. And so they have to be a USA and UCI, which UCI stands for, it's pretty much like the international sanctioning body. And so with a UCI, if you're a UCI rider, you can race internationally. And so if you're a UCI professional team, you go and race the professional nationals. And then they have what's called an elite national championship, which means as long as you're an elite cyclist, which is a whole nother thing. You have to race up to categories, but as long as you're an elite level cyclist, you can race those national championships. And then they also have what's called the U23 national championships, which is if you're between 18 and 23, you can race that race, which is what since I'm 18, I'm able to race in the U23 national championships. And since I'm a professional cyclist, I get to also race at pro nationals. So that's coming up for me. I think that race is the last weekend of June. And besides that, there's always little races around America. Usually in America, we have these things called criteriums or crits. And so it's pretty much the best way to describe it is NASCAR with bikes. So you see people going around in circles on, usually it's in a downtown street setting. And they race for an hour, and you'll see them probably at least once a minute. And so that's really what my racing has been consisted of this year.
Wow, that's great. I tell you what, I want to talk to you a little bit more about that after our interview. I might know a great spot for one of those. Don't know if they have them there. But we'll touch on that another time. So now you mentioned the term elite cyclist. Did the Father Mountain Mitchell put you or get you started into that category?
Yeah. And so with the Assault on Mount Mitchell, that event is technically anybody can race it, which is a really cool atmosphere of it. So anybody who can ride a bike can sign up and race that event. And then there's also, you also that race also gets more of elite level cyclists just because of how hard it is and the recognition that it gets. And so that race, Assault on Mount Mitchell, is a very wide a range of abilities, which makes it a really cool event.
That's great. Hey, Dave, next year you and I should at least apply and start. I don't think we could finish, but we could get us a couple blocks going. How about that?
Yeah, it's funny the whole time Seth is talking about what he's doing. I'm thinking to myself, I haven't been on a bicycle in 30 some odd years. He's probably rode more during that race than I have since I was about 10 when it comes down to bicycling. So yeah, man, it's hats off to him. I mean, it's an amazing thing. Hey, if you don't mind, I've got a question, and this may be a dumb question, but it bears asking. So you ride the bike for 5 hours, okay? And and I understand when you were saying, like, taking breaks, how you get off and you get right back on, because the minute you stop, the time starts ticking. And there's a reason why sharks continually swim in the water, you know what I mean? And you've got to keep moving.
Yeah.
Then, of course, the closer to 50 you get, you will find you have to do that with every little thing you do, because the minute you stop, you're done. But when you get to the top of this mountain, obviously there's not a contingent of people there.
Yeah.
So how do you go about getting back down? For crying out loud, you've just pedaled uphill for 5-6 hours straight, and you get up there and you're like, hey, I won this thing, and you turn around and look and you're going, oh, geez, now I got to go all the way back down. How do you go about doing that? I mean, obviously you just don't go, wee, you know, down the side of a mountaintop, but then I don't see where there'd be a U-Haul up there picking up everybody's bike and ferrying them back, you know? So how do you handle that?
That's actually, yeah, you definitely hit on some of the points. That's yeah, it's pretty funny, actually. So for an event like that, mainly due to insurance purposes, if you do the assault on Mount Mitchell, they have a rule. Whenever you're signing a waiver, they have a rule that you can't, if you do it and you reach the top of Mount Mitchell, you can't ride back down. Just because of insurance purposes, if you crash or something, it's on
right.
them. And so actually, if you do that event, it's really cool because at the top, they shuttle you back down. So they actually do have a U-Haul that takes your bike,
yep.
and then you get on a bus and you get back down the mountain. Usually, because I've ridden to the top of Mount Mitchell before besides doing that event, so outside of that event, and usually you get to the top of the mountain. You always bring a little coat with you in your back pocket. You put on your coat and you kind of go back down on the mountain just because, I mean, there's no other way to do it really. But that also makes Mount Mitchell a really cool event because they do shuttle you back down.
Ah, that's cool. Of course, it's got to stink to win it because then you've got to sit there and wait for all the other deadbeats who are behind you to get up there. Stop.
Dude,
so,
that's so
in the
funny.
Meantime, you're sitting there in the bus, sitting there playing Candy Crush on your phone, waiting for the rest of these knuckleheads to catch up, you know. But it's, yeah, that's got to be something else, you know, because it's funny whenever you watch, and if you've ever played any other type of sports and everything like football, I'll never forget, you know, you're looking at the clock, and as soon as that thing hits double lot on the fourth quarter, win, lose, or draw, the first thing comes off is your helmet. And as you're walking back to the bus or the locker room, you're already wiggling your way out of those shoulder pads. You know, that's the first thing that's got to go. So,
yeah.
You know, you watch these events. You know, you watch, you know, whatever it is, you know, swimming and all that other kind of stuff. You know, you see these guys get out of the pool. And immediately there's like two guys there throwing towels around them and the whole nine yards. And these gymnasts kind of got the same thing where they're kind of huddled off to the side. And I'm thinking, gosh, if Seth has pedaled his way all the way up to a mountain, to be certain, they're not, you know, they just catch a cab from there. You know, it just doesn't work that way. So I appreciate you enlightening me on that because that one had me.
Yeah, because it's pretty funny you also say that too, because like if you watch the Tour de France or something, the Tour de France is probably the highest, it's the most well known cycling event in the world, and it's probably the highest point of a cyclist's career. And if you see a stage of the Tour de France where they finish on top of a mountain, you'll see guys around them doing just that. They'll like hold them. And then they'll grab a coat and put them on, put like a coat on them, make sure that they don't get cold, make sure they have water and everything. And it's really funny because you'll do the assault on Mount Mitchell, which probably, you know, the terrain is just as hard as something you'd see in a stage of the Tour de France. But when you get to the top, you don't have that, you know, you're like, oh, I got to go grab my coat from my back pocket and I got to go find some food and some water. And so it's a little more rogue than most other events.
Yeah, you just can't roll up to the Scotchman and get you an old candy bar and a Gatorade, you know what I mean? It's but yeah, that's like I said, it's an amazing feat, and man, kudos to you. I mean, for crying out loud, this is excellent stuff. I think the most daring thing I ever did on a bike was when me and my brother used to go crabbing in the Broad River down there at Paris Island, and then me and him would do the old tandem pool with a cooler full of crabs. He'd have the left and I'd have the right, and we were trying to in sync our bikes so that way we could pedal back home without spilling the cooler full of loot, you know. But yeah, well done, man. I mean, very impressive.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yes, that's wonderful. Now, we've been talking about cycling and all kinds of things related to your profession. Now, there's also a personal side to Seth Jones. And from what you told me, you're a student at UNC Charlotte. Tell us a little bit about what you're majoring in and what do you like to do? I mean, I know you have a little spare time, and tell us a little bit about the person, not the professional cyclist.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a student at UNC Charlotte. I'm going into my sophomore year of college, so I just finished my freshman year, and I'm majoring in history, and I'm also a double major as of next year in computer science and informatics. And I will say it's difficult to balance both cycling and college, plus, like, you know, a normal 18-year-old social life and everything else with it. But I definitely do have some free time. And so mainly my free time, I'm hanging out with friends or my girlfriend. I'm in a cool little social circle that likes to mainly do stuff outside. And so I'll usually, if I'm not on my bike or in class, you'll usually find me outside hiking or fishing or camping. Something with that nature. And then I'm also a part-time mechanic at a bike shop. So I also do that a little bit on the side. So I'll work on some bikes. And that's usually what I'm doing. Besides that, like to read. I do like to watch Netflix every now and again and watch TV. I'm not crazy. I'm not outside 24/7. But I'm mainly doing stuff outside.
Okay, that's great. Well, now, you mentioned one key thing for me, since I host Bigfoot and Company and ScaryCast. When you're out hiking in the woods, have you ever met my buddy Bigfoot?
I honestly can't say I've never met your buddy Bigfoot, but I am a strong believer that there is a Bigfoot out there. I do think that.
Well, thank you very much. You are a man after my own heart. In fact, you know, as a guy that runs four Bigfoot conferences, I think it's a great topic. But, you know, you mentioned one other thing, and I want people to hear this loud and clear. Looking for Bigfoot gets you out of the house and gets you away from staring at your phone. And you get out, and you have a good time, and you can come back with some suntan. And, Seth, don't you feel bad once you've been out in the woods for a little bit?
Oh, completely. That's one of the reasons I like cycling, you know. It's like gets you outside, gets you, you know, feeling some sun on your skin and breathing in some fresh air. It's great. It's fantastic.
It really is. Now, Dave, we got to get you out hunting for Bigfoot up there in Jacksonville. Because I know that some of the Florida people are there waiting on you.
As many times I live in the woods. As a matter of fact, a lot of times, a little behind the scenes look, when we do the Wednesday night show, there are times when I will leave the phone right there on my deck and have to go relieve myself in the woods. So as many times as I've been out there during the day, during the night, sunshine, rain, snow, you name it, I have yet to see. I've seen deer. I've seen fox. I've seen squirrels. I've seen it all. But what I have not seen is Bigfoot.
Okay,
so,
well, that just means that they don't want you to see them. So that's okay. Seth,
coastal branch.
Yeah. Seth, if I run into him, I'll let him know to say hello to you the next time you're in the woods. How's that?
That sounds great. I've been in areas of the Blue Ridge Mountains before on the Blue Ridge Parkway while riding my bike, and I've definitely seen something weird in the woods, but haven't been curious enough to stop and look more into it. So, I mean, it could have been Bigfoot.
Okay, so you've seen some curious things. I'm sure you do because, you know, I'm from the mountains of North Carolina, a little town called Glenalpin, which you may never have heard of. It's a suburb of Morganton. And I tell you what, the woods up there are pretty creepy, but it's beautiful up there, especially on the Blue Ridge Parkway. It's one of my favorite places in the world, but I'm kind of addicted to Myrtle Beach. That's why I live down here, but I really do like it. So, you know, it's great hearing about you and hearing about some of the things that you do. I would assume, sometimes my assumptions are not correct, I would assume that your family and friends are very supportive of your cycling career.
Oh.
Did I get that guess correct?
Yeah, they're extremely supportive. My family consists of my mom and my dad, and I do have one other brother, and he's 24 years old. His name's Devin Jones, and he loves to cycle too. Maybe not as intently as me, and he's not a professional cyclist, but he's still a good cyclist, and he loves to do that. Actually, on the assault of Mount Mitchell, he was at the bottom to take me back to my car at Spartanburg. So he helped me out a lot there. So I didn't have to ride all the way back from the bottom of Mount Mitchell to Spartanburg. But my parents are extremely supportive. My dad's part of the reason why I got into cycling. My dad's a bike mechanic at a bike store. And so bikes and bicycle tires and bicycle chains kind of run in the family.
That sounds great. This is one time when the apple did not fall very far from the tree. And I think that's great, especially when you're involved in something that one of your family members does, especially for a living. It just makes it a lot of fun. I know that neither of my parents played golf, but my father got addicted to it just like I did.
Yeah.
So it was fine. We got to play together. It was no trick there. And in fact, I was telling somebody the thing that I like about Spruce Pine, because we're on sprucepine.org, is I won my first golf tournament up there on Grassy Creek Golf Course. As I told somebody, everybody that could play golf, they were obviously all somewhere else. But I came out on top, and it's a beautiful place up there. And now in two weekends, Spruce Pine, we've got to give a plug for our hometown here on the podcast. In we'll say 10 days, we're going to have the Spruce Pine Alien Conference and Expo. That is that's going to be a wonderful event. It is June 14th through the 15th. We're going to have a lot of great speakers up there. We have the keynote speaker is from the series Ancient Aliens. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I will be one of the speakers talking about aliens and the Mandela effect. And I know Dave loves that. So we'll be up there having a great time. And I will be directing folks to this podcast because I think it's been great having a chance to get to know you, Seth, and find out a little bit about what makes you tick and about that great race that you won. As we kind of close up tonight, do you have anything else you'd like to share with everybody who's listening to the podcast?
Yeah, for sure. I just want to say thank you guys for having me on too. It's been great, honestly. I've gotten to talk to a lot of people about my event and my result on the assault of Mount Mitchell, and this is by far one of the more fun ones. But yeah, for anybody who's interested more in my career, you can go to hincappyracing.com, which is the team I race for. And if anybody's interested in following me on Instagram or just following the rest of my career, my Instagram handle is SethJones3. And if you guys ride a bike listening to this, just hit me up on Facebook or Instagram. We can go for a ride. But again, thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, it was good having you.
Absolutely. It's been a real pleasure. And thanks so much for being our guest tonight on sprucepine.org. Now, as we learn from Papa Stroh, the maestro of wrestling, we go around the room and we see what kind of plugs does everyone have, because we all have some things coming up or projects we're working on. Dave Atwell, what have you got to plug?
Oh, man. Well, of course, I'll plug and take the shameless opportunity to plug my book series. But just a quick little tip of the hat to Seth, what he had just mentioned about his family gathering around him. my brother does all my editing and fact checking and everything. And, you know, when you read my books, you're like, oh, wow, you know, this guy, you know, it's amazing how you can put all this together. Let me tell you something. I am a total loss when it comes down to that. I'm just a knucklehead with an imagination and a laptop. And it's because of my brother that it looks like I actually have the ability to make sentences. You know what I mean? So hearing how your brother and your mom and dad's got you and everything, I'm going to tell you, young man, you don't know it now, but when you go on out and you get your own family and you know you have your children and everything, it is so refreshing, and that is the best word to use for it, refreshing, to see families coming together and working as a team. And years ago when the old what was the motorcycle show with the dad and the two sons, Orange County Motorcycles, Big Paul or whatever, those guys are always feuding on that show. They're always arguing. And you watch it, and when you get done watching it, you kind of walk away with this, wow. You know, could you imagine eating dinner at their house? You know, they're probably throwing food at one another, stabbing each other with forks, you know. So when you see family coming together and being productive and celebrating productivity and success, man, it's refreshing. And for an old man like me, it does a lot for my heart knowing that, you know, the true definition of family has not been lost. So kudos to your crowd. Well done. And, but yeah, going back to the book series, just the Hunger series on Amazon.com. And from House of Crimson Publishing. And hopefully soon we'll have that fourth book released once we wiggle through all the red tape that's left over from the prior publishing fiasco. But, yes, The Hunger Series by Dave Atwell on Amazon. Give it a look. Three books. Don't be scared until after you read it. I'll look for a plug.
Buy Dave's book. That's the plug there. All right, Seth,
there you
what
go.
Do you got? What is that coming up?
Thank you.
Yes. Today, Seth, what have you got coming up?
Sorry, I didn't hear you there. I just wanted to say thank you to Dave because that was really heartfelt, and I really do appreciate that. When families come together, it's truly wonderful. For me, I got a race up in Tulsa, Oklahoma this weekend. Then past that, I got nationals up in Maryland. Besides that, I'm actually doing a local event in North Carolina. It's called the Tour de Kale. Tour and then DETOUR Kale. And it's an event for a charity for a person named Kale, and it's a great event. And if anybody's interested in riding bikes or anything, definitely look that up. It's June 15th, so it's coming up pretty soon, and I'm really excited to be there.
Well, that's great. So you'll be there while Spruce Pine celebrates the Space Expo. Well, that's great. Well, Seth, thanks for that plug, and I will plug, of course, two upcoming podcasts tomorrow night and every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. live on VOC Nation. It is Pop Culture Stars, starring myself, Dave Atwell, Papa Stroh, the Maestro of Wrestling, Todd Saxon, and, of course, the Queen of Sparkle, Liz Brackett. Seth, if you ever listen to Pop Culture Stars, you will just be amazed at the Queen of Sparkle. She's amazing. So, anyway, and then our broadcast this Thursday night is going to be quite interesting. We have Robin McCray. She's a Bigfoot explorer, and her friend Janice Carter, who wrote one of the most famous books in all of Bigfooting history, and it's called 50 Years of Bigfoot, The Tennessee Coexistence. So it is a very special night on Scary Cast. We'll have the whole crew will be with us, Papa Stroh and Devin Tate from out in Hollywood. So that's going to be just a blast. And other than that, I will plug for Spruce Pine. Be sure to check out the Space Expo June 14th and 15th in downtown Spruce Pine. And join us next week when we will have Eric Colley. He's an astronomer. and he's going to talk about the stars that you will see out at night, because in Spruce Pine at the Space Expo, people are going to be able to look at the stars, so it'll be kind of a great time. So he'll explain to you what you should be looking for, and so that you can have a good time. And Eric's an all-around good guy. He's a lot of fun to talk to. He might even mention a UFO or two, and we're thrilled with that, as usual. So we will see you next week on SprucePine.org with Eric Colley. We've enjoyed our guest tonight, Seth Jones, the winner of the 2019 Assault on Mount Mitchell. Congratulations, Seth. Thank you, Dave. And this is Dr. John saying we will see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thank you, Seth. Well done, young man.
Thank you, guys. Good night, everybody.